The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Okay, Tov. Do you think that David Zimmerman gets his answers from Google, Howard? This is a very serious issue.
It's a serious... Look, first of all, I don't mind because I don't know how anybody could be expected to know it without a little
but
bit of help.
He does want to know his sports stuff.
I would guess some from Google and some from his knowledge. That's what I would guess.
It seems like he knows a few things, and it's great that you have listeners like him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Absolutely right. All right, a formal indictment against Prime Minister Netanyahu was filed yesterday. What was revealed in the formal documents that was not known before? Anything?
Quite a few things, to be honest. This formal document, this formal filing was sent yesterday because the Netanyahu prosecution, the Netanyahu defense team, had made the claim that there were certain pieces of information that they were not privy to, that they hadn't yet received from the prosecution, which effectively meant that the 30-day clock couldn't begin to tick. And this 30-day clock is a time period within which any member of Knesset, any serving member of Knesset who is indicted for any reason at all has the right to appeal to the Knesset for to get immunity from prosecution. So any serving Knesset member has the right to appeal to the Knesset to get immunity from prosecution, and they have 30 days within which to do that. And it had become unclear as to whether Netanyahu's 30-day clock was ticking or whether it wasn't ticking, and his defense team had said actually it couldn't tick because there were certain pieces of information that hadn't been revealed, and those pieces of information were revealed in no uncertain terms yesterday when this official letter was sent to the Speaker of the Knesset, Yuli Edelstein, to say, first of all, that as far as the prosecution is concerned, the 30-day clock begins on Monday. So that is when the 30 days begins for the Prime Minister to apply to the Knesset for immunity. And there is a general feeling that he is going to do so, that he is actually going to make that application, something which, as a general rule, other Knesset members have not made in the past when they've been indicted for any type of illegal issue. But there is a feeling that Prime Minister Netanyahu is going to apply, and there is a feeling that he's going to leave it until quite late in the day. So he's not going to make the application on Monday as soon as the 30-day clock begins to tick, but rather he's probably going to leave it a few weeks just to see what happens, because obviously we're running into a period where we might well have the dissolution of the Knesset for a third round of elections if by the 11th of December we haven't got a government. And so a lot of confusion as to what might happen next and, what Netanyahu might choose to do under the current circumstances. But really, just to the point as to what was revealed in this letter, 333 names of prosecution witnesses were revealed in this letter.
Wow.
An astonishing thing. And some of these names just in themselves are astonishing. Former U.S. ambassador to the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. Ron Dermer, former head of the Mossad, Tamir Pardo, billionaires from the United States and from elsewhere around the world, members of the Packer family, Milchin, just a whole host of names, including Yair Lapid, serving members of Knesset, and including all manner of people who've worked within the Prime Minister's office and within the Prime Minister's residence, some of them known to have turned state witness, people who have been involved in apparently receiving favors on his from Prime Minister Netanyahu, Ron Lauder, one of the names on the list. It just goes on and on and on. Just so many people from different walks of life who the prosecution claim they'll be able to call upon to give evidence in what is really three cases. They're three separate cases involving corruption and fraud and breach of trust. And so this list has really become something with all these names that have been published. People have really been surprised by, first of all, the length of the list, how many names are on this list, And second of all, some of the individual names, very, very well-known people indeed in public life, and indeed well-known business people from around the world, not only from Israel, but from all around the world, apparently will be called upon to give evidence in this. So one of the other pieces of information that was revealed in the letter is that the case is due to be tried in a Jerusalem district court before three judges. That apparently was an important piece of information that had to be revealed. And it is generally felt that the Jerusalem courts are a little bit more deferential to public figures than the courts in Tel Aviv might be. That's an interesting little observation that was made by one of the articles that I read yesterday, that they feel that just in general the Jerusalem courts may well favor Netanyahu more than the Tel Aviv courts. But of course, we're quite a long way away from that. And some people are predicting that this case might take 8 to 9 years until it is actually brought to trial and until it's finally resolved and all the rest of it. So who knows?
I don't know what's worse. Is it the ongoing elections after election after election or this case?
I'll leave that to you to decide. I think they have an equal level of difficulty for
well,
me. That,
actually,
you know,
strangely enough, our next story is equally as bad. Actually, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court has again rejected the possibility of a court probe into the Mavimara incident. I mean, this one is also the gift that keeps on giving. Is this the end of the story now?
Well, I certainly hope so, because what's interesting is that we spoke about this a few months ago when the judges in the International Criminal Court actually ruled that they were sending the case back to the prosecution for reevaluation for the third time. Okay, so this was already the second decision by the judges that they wanted the case to be reevaluated, and this was going to be the third reevaluation by the prosecution office of the International Criminal Court. And interesting, Fatou Ben Zouda, who is the head of she's the chief prosecutor in the prosecution office of the International Criminal Court, came as has been the case before, said she has no intention of pressing charges over this event, which took place back in 2010. People will remember that this was one of the ships in a flotilla that came to try to break the Gaza siege, and that Israeli naval soldiers were sent out to meet this flotilla. And when they boarded the Mavi Marmara, they found people there who had come ready for a fight with all kinds of weapons and with all kinds of things that they were trying to attack the soldiers as they were abseiling down ropes onto the boat itself. And in the end, unfortunately, people were killed by the fracas that took place after the Israeli soldiers boarded this ship. And of course, this has been an ongoing issue. Not only diplomatic relations between Israel and Turkey have been substantially affected by the 9 Turkish citizens who died in that particular event, but also because of the fact that it's backwards and forwards within the International Criminal Court, where people are being accused of war crimes and all manner of things, because they came on board a ship where people were quite determined to really hurt, if not kill, those soldiers who were boarding the ship and who had a legitimate right to do so. You know, and one can hold whatever view you like to hold about whether the ship had a right to come and try and break the blockade or not. That's a discussion that we can hold separately. But anyway, the good news, I think it's good news, is that for the third time in a row, Ben Suda has decided that there is no reasonable basis to proceed with an investigation. That was exactly the way that she put it. And she said that, you know, there would be absolutely no further action on this from the prosecutor's office. I don't know whether this means that the International Criminal Court will now leave it alone, or whether the judges on the International Criminal Court will once again be asked to rule on it, because it just seems to have been an ongoing issue over and over again, with the court judges not supporting the prosecution decision not to proceed with a case. I mean, that's kind of an ironic situation, but that's the way it's been. These appeals have been brought before the judges, And each time, now for the third time, the judges were called upon to decide twice, and each time they decided that it should go back to the prosecution for evaluation. So hopefully this is the end of the story now, and people can move on, because as we also know, Israel's entered into this agreement with Turkey whereby Israel has actually paid reparations for those 9 individuals who were killed to Turkey and has tried to rebuild diplomatic relations with Turkey since then. So between Israel and Turkey, things have kind of been put to bed, I think.
Stable.
They've come to an agreement. Neither of the two parties were particularly satisfied with the agreement, but it was an agreement.
That's generally a good agreement. As long as they're both happy or they're both unhappy, then it's a good agreement.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an agreement in order to allow diplomatic relations to be reestablished and for ambassadors to be returned to their various posts, their respective posts, both in Israel and in Turkey. And, you know, the two countries have kind of moved on, albeit in a very strained relationship at the moment, it would be fair to say. It's not a comfortable relationship, but, you know, I think time will allow things to move on. And, of course, further events, more recent events, will be more influential, I think, on the relationship between Israel and Turkey than those particular events.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about Tesla. So they've taken further steps to open its business in Israel. What's happening with that?
I mean, it's all been watched very, very carefully because, you know, I think there's two things that are brought to bear about Tesla's involvement in Israel. The first of which is that electric cars in general and self-driven cars in particular is a huge industry in Israel. Every major car manufacturer has a development lab of some sort or another in Israel where they are using Israeli technology in order to further the whole system of electric cars and in particular driverless vehicles. And we see, as we drive around, we see these test vehicles around the street with all these cameras and sensors mounted on them as they drive around the streets of Israel, trying to carry out tests of the latest technology that's being developed here. So that's a huge industry. And we know that Elon Musk and Tesla are very much involved in that. And it's of great interest to Israelis to have a company like Tesla come to Israel to sell their vehicles and to allow Israelis to partake of full-blown electric car technology. I mean, one would think that in Israel, with the size of the country, that an electric car would work pretty well here because you could get almost from the top to the bottom of Israel on one charge or maybe a very limited charges. And so it seems that Israel is very, very well built in order to cope with some of the limitations that electric cars come with. But I think what's so Tesla's actually set up this company in Israel now, which is called Tesla Motors Israel. They've already registered a company as a wholly owned subsidiary of Tesla in the USA. And the reason for the registration, the registration says is that this is for the importation, distribution, sale, maintenance, repair of electric vehicles, mobile energy storage systems. This is some of the description that's come out of the registration of this company. But I think what's really even more important than that is some of the solar energy work that Tesla have been doing. And it would appear as if though they are quite eager to further that in particular when they come to Israel, solar panels, solar energy systems. And of course, we do know that, you know, Tesla have got some quite interesting solutions like the solar glass roof that Tesla has developed. They've got some quite interesting solutions on the solar side. Israel, of course, is ideally situated in order to take advantage of solar technology. And in fact, most homes in Israel today get their hot water from solar panels that are on the roof. And it's becoming even more common now for people to mount solar energy panels, even further solar energy panels on their roof, generate electricity, and to potentially sell that electricity back to the national grid in order to make a little business out of it. And of course, in so doing, to reduce that particular household's electricity bills. But also, of course, it's all about using renewable energy rather than some of, unfortunately, the coal-driven the electricity production facilities that we have. So this is really a huge move towards renewable energy. And I think that the relationship between Tesla and Israel within this whole solar energy sphere is a very interesting link up. And so we are awaiting quite eagerly the arrival of Tesla in Israel. And I'm particularly eager to see what they're going to do on the solar energy side, because I know that that is a huge agenda item that Elon Musk is following. And I think that he will have a very welcoming environment when coming into Israel to try to further that side of his business.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's going to be something really, really well worth watching, because when you get that combination of his type of drive towards innovation and Israel as a country and as a focus on innovation, and especially when it comes to sustainable energy, it should be something fascinating and should be, I believe, can change the world for the better. Very, very interesting and exciting news. Anthony Wright, thank you as always.